Welcome to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.
It's a little bit of March madness because it's madness that it's March, and it's called Food Bites with Sarah Patterson. Hello and welcome to it. I'm Kevin Hillier and she is Sarah Patterson.
And we're both very mad.
Well, yeah, it helps.
You know what, Kevin? It's not often during a podcast of Food Bites that I tear up or I get emotional.
You did.
This is one of those rare occasions where the guest did bring me to tears, the guest being Jeff Cox, better known and fondly known as Coxie to radio and television audiences.
I don't reckon I've ever called him Jeff in my life.
No, I don't think many people would know him as Jeff.
No. Lovable character from radio, television, from his days as a band member, a drummer in all sorts of, you know, Coxie at the Roxy was huge.
Well, yes, and he also famously filled in for the Little River Band drummer when he hurt his hand in a barbecue accident, which he will talk to us about. But what I love most about Coxie is that he is 100% exactly the same on air as he is off.
Yep. He's a lunatic on air he's a lunatic off air.
He's a regular good bloke and he's a consummate gentleman. And we were so, it was such a joyous experience to chat to Cox. And we had a great yarn, didn't we?
Did we get through some topics? So sleep apnea, which you'll hear him on all the ads for the CPAP machines.
Well, and also just recently he's had a real health battle, but he'll open up about that as well.
Yep. Talking about touring South Africa with Cliff Richard, America with Brian Cadd, the Little River Band. It's all in there. It's all coming up. And then we'll get to the food poll, hello, breakfast.
It's a breakfast showdown, you know, cereal offenders, you might say. Classic case of the cornflakes up against the rice bubbles. I know what I like.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? Yes, we'll be told. Don't you worry about that.
Can I just say, Kevin, please, no matter what they are, don't put any milk on them. I still don't get why you put milk on cereal, but that's a whole different thing altogether.
That's another podcast
series.
Why would
you make it soggy?
Well,
why would you make it soggy?
No, it's to make it edible and to make it tastier and to make it – oh, never mind. Let's get to Coxie.
You're listening to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.
Coxie, it is so lovely to have you on our show. Firstly, just to start out, how are you keeping these days? Are you well?
I'm well now. We're doing a lot of travelling since the TV show finished, and I was in Vietnam and I cleverly managed to pick up cellulitis and blood poisoning and finished up about 12 hours. They said I would have been dead. But anyway, went to the Cabrini Hospital, which is wonderful. And they gave me some pills and whatever, and they said, clean bill of health, be careful. Yeah, so I'm good. I'm very good now. I've lost about 12K because when you get cellulitis, they have to check every organ in your body, and it all came back as fine. They said, but your liver's a bit swollen. I said, well, what could cause that? And so I didn't have a drink for 2 months. And that's back to normal, but not drinking for 2 months, I lost 10 kilos. I must have drank a lot in the old days.
That cellulitis is a really nasty business too.
Oh, awful. And I've had it, believe it or not, 3 times. The first time I got it was in a car park in Beaumaris. I walked past a tea tree twig which scratched my leg, and that was enough. And I've had it twice since then. But the most amazing thing, I was talking to Brian Cadd, who I know you guys would know, and Cadd got it about 2 years ago, and the doctor said it came in through a pinprick in his heel.
Oh,
good grief.
That's how the bug gets you. So you have to be – and when I was in Vietnam, we've been about 8 times, and last year it was far too hot, so we went – earlier this year, and of course it was still 40 degrees with the Vietnamese, who were lovely people, saying we've never known it to be this hot. Well, you couldn't swim in the pool. It was hotter than you'd bath a child in. It was just horrible, and they reckon that's the bugs just live around the pool, and they reckon that's where I got it. So there you go. But I'm good now, and that's it. That's in the past, and I'm looking after myself and just having a good time playing. I tell everybody now I'm a professional golfer. I'm just not making any money.
Well, you're not alone there. Don't worry about that. So what are you up to these days? I mean, television, radio, I mean, we know you from so many things, playing in bands over the years. So what are you doing?
Yeah, I still have a hit if they've got the money. I don't have to do the local hotel for $100 anymore, which is nice. And I just pick and choose who I want to play with and where I want to play. And that's fantastic. And I've got, I really believe in it. I'm with Sleep Apnea, the machines that you use from CPAP Victoria.
Yep.
And I do a lot of the voiceovers for the outdoor leisure shows, which are all the caravan and camping, and which I've been doing on and off for 20 years. So enough to keep me busy, but not enough to make me work 5 days a week, which is lovely.
We talked about your illustrious music career just before, and you mentioned Caddy, who we had on this show just last week, I believe. But when you first picked up those drumsticks, I think it was at the age of 15, Coxie, what was the plan? Did you envision the career that you ended up having?
I first played when I was 3 years old with my mother's pots and pans. And then my father was a career soldier. And the only thing that kept me happy on a Sunday was finding somewhere in a park in those days where a brass band was playing, and I'd stand beside the drummer all afternoon. And I finished up in sixth grade at Brighton Road State School playing the drums there, and I could play all the Southern Command band marches because I'd been hanging around with them for 3 years. And so I was the only guy who didn't have to have a felt on his snare drum, so I was really cool. And then at 15, I got taught by a guy, he only taught three of us, a guy called Alan Mansfield, who was a show drummer out of Vegas, and he was an unbelievable reader. And he made us all learn to read. And I remember thinking, what a waste of time. Well, from being a recording musician for 20 or 30 years, thank God I could read. Like, I played on everything from Snowy River to all those sort of things. But the interesting thing about Alan Mansfield is he taught me for 5 years, from 15 to 20. And he left and went to Parramatta Road, opened one of the first car yards up there, made $2 million in about 2 years, and went back to the States, and I've never seen him since. But he was a wonderful teacher. So yeah, he was a great man.
What was the highlight of your music career from your point of view? Was it LRB?
Yeah, it's sad, of course, because Derek burnt his hands, and yeah. I didn't realise. But if you put your hand flat on the table and you look just below your fingers, that part of your skin there is the thinnest skin, that part of the thinnest skin you've got on your body. And they kept putting pressure bandages on that. I was only supposed to do about 2 months in America till he got well again to play. And of course, that part of the skin on his hands kept lifting, and they were incredibly worried about infection. So from what turned out to be 2 months was about 6 months. Then I did the Australian tour as well for another 5 weeks. So I was with them nearly a year, and it really was just, I was a single bloke in America in one of the biggest bands in the world. I mean, you couldn't wish for anything more.
Yeah,
it was fabulous. That'd be the highlight. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And I think also with Caddy at the World's Fair in Spokane, when Whitlam came into power, he donated a lot of money to the arts. So Cad and his band, the Bootleg Family, were able to go to America and do the World's Fair in Spokane, and then went down and we got the record Let Go. I think we got to number 8 in Seattle. Then we went down and did rock concert in LA, and then we did Wolfman Jack show. Who was a very famous jock, who you'd know, Kev. Then we were given 48 hours to get out of the country because we didn't have the permits. And Tudor just said, we'll have a plane out there. And they said, you don't get out in 24 or 48, I can't remember. You don't get out, you never come back. We all went, So we left in a hell of a hurry. So. Yes. What a lot of people don't know, Cliff Richard and the Shadows, I had to put an Australian band together. I got a phone call at 3 o'clock one morning, and this bloke said, Hello, I'm Peter Gormley. I'm Cliff Richard's manager, and I thought, who's this? Who's this? 3 o'clock
having
in the morning.
And
anyway, cutting a long story short, about six of us went over to Africa, and we did South Africa. We did Cape Town, Durban, Joburg, and we did those for about 6 weeks, and they were fabulous because I didn't realise Cliff Richard was bigger than the Beatles in South Africa, which I didn't know. And we were taken away in armoured cars. But, of course, we'd open the back doors because most of us were single. We'd open the back and say, do you want to meet Cliff? Jump in the truck, girl. And when we got back to the hotel, they said, where's Cliff? They said, he'll be here in a minute. Little did they know he stayed in a separate hotel. He wouldn't even stay with us.
So
I could write a book, but we'd be arrested.
Yeah, exactly.
With all that overseas travel you've experienced, Coxie, no doubt you've taken delight in many different cuisines and foods. Do you have any particular memories that stick out in that area?
Yeah, in South Africa, this guy, which to Cliff's credit, which only two people have ever done this. One was Warren Mitchell, because I worked with him, believe it or not. The guy from Till Death Do Us Part in Australia. But also in Africa, there was this restaurant called the Villa Borghese, which is a famous French restaurant. I thought, hang on, what, this is Africa. Anyway, the manager came over and the food was amazing. We ate there the first night and paid. And he came over and said, Mr. Richard, we'd like you to eat with us the whole time you're here. Well, we did 8 days rehearsal over there, then 8 days in the town because we did about 5 sell-out shows. He said, we'd like you to eat. He said, I would be honoured to eat here as long as my band can as well. So the food we ate in South Africa there was amazing. And, yeah, that would be one of the featured highlights of, I mean, to eat this magnificent food. But, God, some of the places, I'm a dreadful foodie. I've always had problems with my weight. And so it's not good. Like, you know, it's not good. They put whatever you put in front of me, like my Vivian, my wife says, well, don't eat it. And I say, well, don't put it in front of me. Like, just give me a piece of steak and a couple of bits of lettuce leaf and I'll be happy. But no, you get the full number. And Viv makes a roast dinner exactly like my mother, and only mums can make a roast dinner. And her spaghetti bolognese is to die for. And I keep saying, well, don't give me so much. Don't eat it. Don't put so much in the plate.
Oh.
So it's one of those, you know.
But are you a sweet tooth as well? Do you like
No.
Oh, you're not?
No. I used to love it in the old days, for those who can remember. Crepe Suzette's done at the table. Like, they were beautiful. But, I mean, am I a sweet – would I rather a dozen oysters and a steak than a steak and any dessert? I'll take the oysters any day. No, I'm not a sweet tooth. I don't eat a lot of chocolate, but there again, if Vivian buys some chocolate and puts it in a bowl and she says, I'm going to bed, and she gets up in the morning, the chocolate is gone. So am I a sweet tooth? No, only when it's in front of me.
So, again, it's not your problem, it's your supplier.
You're
your supplier.
It's been that way forever.
Now, so many people would fondly remember you, Coxie, from TV and Coxie's Big Break. But before we go to that, there was you've had a great career in radio as well, starting out 3DB, and that's where I remember meeting you from was 3TT in the days when you co-hosted Breakfast with Gavin. Take us back to those days.
Well, it started with Bert. When Bert took over DB, he got Julie McKenna and I to do afternoons between 12 and 3, and then Alan Dale did Drive, and he's the guy from Neighbours and now American actor.
Yeah.
He lived round the corner. So we used to have wonderful times, and, of course, I contrared the Fairy Stalk in Ackland Street. They used to bring Chinese in every Sunday for lunch. So There we go again with food. But Bert said to me one day, he said, oh, I'm so incredibly busy. He said, could you do a couple of mornings a week? And I said, what? When? He said, well, Mickey DeStoop did mornings and then Bert did 9 till 12. So I said, well, yeah, okay. So I did that and it seemed to go rather well. And Bert was having a much better time not having to be on radio because he was trying to run a radio station. So that started and then Ian Toole arrived and promptly got rid of Bert and everybody else because that was his job. And then he booked me. He said, would you like to do breakfast? I thought, oh, yeah, all right. Breakfast, yeah, that would be bad. And he said, who do you want to do it with? And I knew Gavin, and I thought, oh, Gavin and Coxie, that'll do. And so we did that for 3 years. And then we got to 7.9, and we got the flick after 7.9, which you do in radio, which we'd all remember. And I remember vividly doing it with the breakfast guys at Double TFM, 10, 15 years ago. And they said, oh, great. How was it when you were here? I said, oh, God. I said, we got fired at 7.9. They said, don't say anything. We're only 4.6. So, yeah, we had fun. I must admit, I hated getting up at 3:30 in the morning. I think the musician thing in me that, without being funny, we went to bed at 3:30. You know, we didn't get up. And I was continually always tired. It was horrible. But that's when I found out I had sleep apnea. Because when you've got sleep apnea, you don't sleep properly and it's dangerous and you're tired. And I actually fell asleep and I swear on my mother's grave, I was driving from the city going down Punt Road toward Brighton where I live and I stopped on the corner of Punt Road and Toorak Road in the front row and promptly fell asleep. And I got a toot from the guy behind me, which gave me a hell of a fright. And that's when I started to do something about it and got a machine all those years ago. And then I got a phone call from CPAP Victoria and they said, we want to talk to you. Do you really believe in this? I said, it's changed my life. And it did. Mm. All of a sudden, Vivian actually said to me, after using it for 2 weeks, she said, your eyes went blue again. And I'm not kidding.
Wow.
So, yeah, so that was radio. It was interesting. It was very cutthroat. You know, I mean, Johnny Blackman and Wilbur are on UZ. Then somebody, who did we ring and say, sorry, you got the boot? It may have been somebody on AW. We said, oh, really sorry, but. I mean, Ross Stevenson, that's an amazing story on A-Dub to do breakfast that long and get up every morning at 3:30. I'm buggered if I know how he does it.
I think everyone wonders about that. Now, I want to get back in the kitchen for one tick. Are you? What do you like in the kitchen? Not a spectator. I mean, as a doer, not a spectator.
Not wanting to pour treacle on myself. Not wanting to pour treacle on myself. I would be possibly the best barbecue chef for a steak you have ever met in your life.
Right.
And Vivian, to the extent we were out last night and the steaks were $40, $45 for a steak and salad, she said, don't even think about it. She won't even let me buy a steak. None of us. The only trouble is now all the kids know I'm a pretty good steak. And it's costing me a fortune. Like, because Viv had two, I've got two, so now we've got a mixed family of four. You get all them round. I say, what about a big bowl of spaghetti bowl? No, we'll have steaks.
There you go.
So, I mean, you know, all of a sudden 8 or 10 steaks are starting to cost a lot of money.
Sounds like you made a rod for your back.
I do fancy myself with shazlicks, pork chops, four-quarter lamb chops and steak. Is my go. The rest of it, I do a good Sunday morning bacon and eggs on the barbie. I'm a very barbie person. I love barbecues. But in the kitchen, Vivian just throws me out. She said, I am the messiest. I don't cook. Like, even after breakfast, if I make a bit of toast, there's always stuff laying around. I'm hopeless. So I stay out of the kitchen. Yeah, but as a barbecue chef, I'll cook your steak one night, guys. You'll Ooh. Be suitably impressed.
Have you got any secrets to impart with the in cooking the perfect steak?
Yes, I bought from a market in, I tell you where it was, at the Mornington Racecourse. I bought some garlic salt, and I sprinkled the garlic salt on top of the steak and just slowly just massage it in a little bit, and that's it.
Oh.
No other secrets, no other pepper and salt. But pepper and salt, oh, not so much salt. I'm not keen on salt because with all the medical things we've all been through at my age, you know how salt's bad for you. But good ground pepper on a steak is worth it. But the other thing you must have is Worcestershire sauce. And my God, when you're overseas, you have trouble. When you, especially in up round Vietnam, you say, "Got any Worcestershire sauce?" And we said, "What? What? I said, "Worcestershire sauce, the black sauce." They got no idea. So I actually take a small bottle of Tabasco and my Worcestershire sauce. I have a shoulder bag, and I take it to breakfast every morning. So that way, I never have to ask for anything.
Is there anything you won't eat?
no, not really. Oh, look, I remember when I was little, my mum, I think it was swede or something like that, like a vegetable like that. But is there anything I won't eat? No, not really. No, I'm pretty good. My wife's got lots of allergies, food allergies, but I haven't got any. So yeah, no, anything I won't eat. There probably is. I can't think of it. If somebody said, "Oh, do you want this?"
Just talking about your telly career, Coxie, for a bit. I mean, happy place for you, good fit for you in front of the camera, always felt comfortable?
Oh, loved it. Absolutely loved it. I mean, we got the job, Ian Johnson, who you used to know, yeah. Jono, didn't you? Yeah. Yeah, well, you both did. Well, Jono rang me one day and I was in minutes. I was doing it for minutes. I was in real estate for about 2 years. And the problem is when I started in real estate, the band, Cox Brady and the Occasional Lady, which was Lisa Edwards, we got all the corporate gigs. So all of a sudden, we were working till 3 and 4 in the morning, and here I am trying to do real estate. I remember coming home one night from the Hyatt, and Brady said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm just going to put out the flags and the boards." He said, "You know, auction this day." He said, "You can't do that. It's 4 o'clock in the morning." I said, "Who's going to pinch an auction flag, Brady?" And then the boss rang up at about 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. and said, "Well done, Coxie, you're up early this morning." Little did I say I was still in bed. I'd put them out at 6 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning. But then I used to do open for inspections and fall asleep on the couch. And I was awful. And Jono rang up and said, "Hey, listen, do you want to give me half a day?" He said, "I might have your retirement." I said, "Yeah, sure," because I wasn't really enjoying real estate, and it was the first time I'd ever worked in my life. And so anyway, I did that and did a – there was Rob Gell, who was sitting on a cannon when I walked in at the park in Williamstown. I'm sure people would know. There's a big cannon there near the ship.
Yep.
And he's sitting on the barrel of the cannon, and he did this piece to camera that went for about 60 seconds. I thought, geez, that's good. That, I thought, well, that, I'm buggered there. I'll never get that right. And then Jennifer Kite, who I love, Jen, and it was really windy, and her hair kept blowing in her face, and the producer kept getting angry because she kept stopping and brushing her hair back. And I thought, that's all right. I reckon she's blowing this. Anyway, Rob Gell says to me, "You've got to get this gig, Coxie." I said, "What?" He said, "Mate, I'm under contract to Nine." He said, "They're not going to give me any more money. I'm just going to have to do this as well." He said, "Get the gig." So anyway, I thought the only way I can get it is to muck around. So I walked into things and fell over and did all that. And they sent it to Peter Meakin, who was up in Sydney at that stage, and said, "I'll get the big bloke. He's a lunatic." So we did it. And then, to Jono's credit, and I was broke. Like, I was absolutely – my first wife had gone and I'd lost everything. He said, "I tell you what I'm going to do." This is October, right? He said, "I'm going to put you under contract from tomorrow." I said, "Oh, okay." And he said, "Because I don't think I can get this to air till probably January, February." And he said, "You probably need the bucks." I said, "I certainly do." I signed there and then, paid me the money, and that – that postcards, as it was then, didn't go to air till the end of March. So I got 6 months of money. He saved my life for that because I had no money and I was still trying to pay a mortgage and all that sort of thing. Mm. So anyway, we did all that. And then after about 5 years, he called me into his office one day and he said, "We're moving." I said, "What do you mean we're moving?" He said, "We're going to Seven." I said, "To Seven? Why?" He said, "You don't have to worry." He said, "I'm going to give you a 2-year contract and more money." I said, "Do I sign this here or where do I sign?" And so then that went. So it went for 15 years.
Wow. From
5 years at Postcards, 11 years at Seven.
Yeah.
And I remember vividly we had a lovely lady called Tanya, who was our researcher, who was my age. And she said, "Well, Coxie, you've got six." When we first signed, when it first went to air in the March of 2000, she said, "You've got 6 months. You've got 6 months of not having to worry about anything and because you're going to be well paid." Well, that was 15, 16 years. And it was quite amazing because I can tell you a million. One is a really lovely story. We were in Southland, Viv and I, and this really attractive mum, she was about, 45 or something, with two little children, probably about 5 and 7. Well, the 7-year-old little boy has grabbed hold of my leg, and the 5-year-old girl has grabbed hold of my hand and wouldn't let go. And she said, "Oh, Coxie, I'm really sorry to bother." I said, "It's no bother." I said, "Can you tell me what's happening here?" And she said, "You went to air," and she had the date on March, whatever, on the Sunday night. She said, "My father passed away on the Friday before. And on the Sunday night, the children were, of course, they were very young. She said, I can't get over this, but we said, this is your new granddad because I came down in the little cartoon." So I still send him a card every Christmas.
Oh wow, that's such.
And she teared up. I teared up, and I said, "I think we better be going." I mean, they were the loveliest kids, and that what television does. If you're in the current affairs and all that, you probably get people will abuse you and do all that stuff. But we never got any abuse, and everybody said, "Well, you're just like off the air as you are on television." I said, "Well, I guess that's why it works because I can't be bothered with it." We've all been through, because we're all getting older, we've all been through so much nonsense. You think, well, what the hell, you know? I mean, we did some dreadful things. We had this very wonderful woman who was very proper and said, "Oh, hello." She said, "This is my restaurant. My specialty is jam and cream." I said, "What, scones?" "Yeah, yes. I make them extremely well." "Oh, terrific." And we'd had a big night the night before, and the cameraman and I were still very, very good mates. And he looked at me, and he came out from the lens, and he said, "I dare you." Anyway, she brought them back, and I got them, and we were overlooking the water. I've got to be careful I'm not going to tell you where it is. We're overlooking the water, beautiful ocean, and I got the plate, and I took a bite, and threw the jam and cream on the plate, threw it up against the window, and the jam and the cream. And then I said, "These are dreadful." Well, I thought she was going to have a turn. And the producer was going to kill us. He said, "What did you do that for?" I said, she was just so uppity. Like I said, we're just normal guys telling people where they can come for some jam and cream. Don't tell me how good they are. I'll tell you if they're any good. But they're all that. There's all little story, and there's so many stories I can't tell you because we'd probably be arrested. But we didn't do anything really wrong, I must admit, but funny things that happened. But we loved every minute of it, never got sick of it, and got to travel the world because it started off as a Victorian travel show. And then all of a sudden the Gold Coast got wind of it, so the Gold Coast Tourism Authority gave us money to go up and do a show there, and we did that. Then we did another show in Sydney, and then all of a sudden we're in the Pacific, we're in Hawaii, and then we're in Austria, and we're traveling the world. And it's not the same as a tourist because you're always thinking of what you've got to do and how you do it. But, God, we had a good run. And so, yeah, it was just all fun. But we ate some wonderful food, like food that in Austria, you know, all the porks and the
all Wiener that, schnitzel. And
then is there anything I don't like? I remember the first time; it's very difficult. I've been to China 6 times. We did China, and we're in Tianjin, which is our sister city, which is about 140K northwest of Beijing, and we did this, and they always did banquets because when you come as European, as Australians and that, they were trying to get business from us. We were trying to get business from them. And, you know, you've got these 20-course banquets and there's about 15 people around the table. And Tanya, who I told you about before, the researcher, would sit beside me and she'd look at me and just shake her head and say, don't eat that. Yeah. Like, and this revolting thing came round in a bowl and it smelt like you wouldn't believe it. Cozzy, because they couldn't call me Coxy. They couldn't pronounce the X. So I was, and my mates still call me Cozzy. Right, Cozzy. So I was Cozzy, and he said, Cozzy, this Chinese delicacy. I said, oh, really? And I'm fiddling about it with my chopsticks. And this ostrich stomach.
Oh, yeah.
That's exactly what you should do. I rang Viv, and she still laughs about it. I rang Viv at 3 o'clock in the morning in tears. And in those days, I didn't drink any beer. I just drank spirits. But I was living on 2 pints of beer a night. I just couldn't eat the food. But last time we were there, it was 2015. They had a Peking duck restaurant. You would crawl across broken glass to get to. It was that good. They had an Italian section where the guy used to ring his mum on a Thursday afternoon, get the recipe for the weekend, and that was the special. Well, we ate there, and then they just opened McDonald's, and we took all the staff from the government building. Oh, about 20 of them, I suppose, about half and half, 20 blokes, 20 chicks. We took them to McDonald's. They'd never been to a fast food thing before. All the blokes loved it. Not one girl would eat a hamburger. Not one.
Wow.
They wouldn't touch them. We don't know why. They just had a salad. That was it. But that was all right. That's what they wanted. But the food now over there is sensational. But the only thing with Peking duck, they bring it out and put it in front of you. And we're sitting there for about 5 minutes. What's something wrong? No, you make. So you could make the biggest Peking duck rolls you've ever seen in your life. The only thing you had to be aware of, if it got down to about 4 pieces left on this big platter, it'd go and a new platter would come. So if you didn't say, no, we've had enough, and all of a sudden there'd be enough food to feed the Australian army would arrive on your table, you know. Television was, and it was a godsend for me. I know now with a lot of the musos my age that have been through lots of stuff that they just, there's nothing, you know, there's no super, there's no, and so, yeah, very lucky, very like blessed, as my wife says, you've been blessed. So, and I'll take it every day of the week. Thank
bloody
you very much.
You deserve it. You work bloody hard for it, so enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. No, I intend to. Sure I'm doing well because I knew this interview. I haven't had a drink today and it's 20 to 2. I'm doing really well.
Mate, it's lovely to catch up with you. Delight to talk to you as always. Good health and happiness to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
I hope so, and all the very best of health. And when you sit down tonight and have dinner, have one for me, of course.
Shall do.
Good on you. Thanks, Coxie.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
You're listening to Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.
He's a good bloke and it's fantastic to have him on the program.
We could have chatted and gas bagged, I should say, for hours.
Well, we sort of did after we stopped the tape.
the stories we couldn't tell.
And then he did tell us some stories that you can't broadcast. Very entertaining. Thank you. Thank you, Jeffrey.
Yes, thank
you. Lovely to have you on the program. Now, let's get to the food poll because it's a biggie.
I thought we'd put the cornflakes up against the rice bubbles.
Did you?
Yeah. I was thinking about those little six packs you get in the motel
those ones,
rooms.
Yeah.
Where they got the Cocoa Pops and the Fruit Loops.
Yeah. Yeah. A bit like the assorted biscuits one. There was one that no one ever touches.
Yeah.
But it's not the cornflakes and it's not the rice bubbles because they are popular.
No, they certainly are. Now, let's start with the wonderful Joylene, and she says she likes cornflakes.
Sue Landry, cornflakes.
Terry says, out of those two, rice bubbles.
Lisa Marie McDonald says neither.
Oh. Rebecca says both. Can't get rice bubbles here being Thailand, only cornflakes.
Now, here's a weird one. Here's a weird twist.
Weirdly, you can get puffed wheat, but not at the supermarket, only at small local shops. There you go.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yes.
Amanda says rice bubbles.
David says cornflakes go soggy and they are unappetizing. See, Kevin? As a kid, I remember rice bubbles coming out of my nose.
Right.
I'm not sure how. And besides, rice bubbles are used for chocolate crackles. So bonus points there. I didn't even think of that, David. It's so true. When you get all that kofa, a big wadge of it right down the bottom.
It's good.
Yeah.
Ange says Vegemite toast.
Thanks, people Ange. Get their own options.
Good on you, Ange.
Sharon says yuck to both.
Kathy says cornflakes.
Glenn Rodder says rice bubbles for me, but only just.
Davin says yes to rice bubbles plus a Mars bar equals a Mars bar slice. Yummo.
Yes. It's what you do with rice bubbles. Yes. Kerry says crunchy nut cornflakes with extra hot milk. Now, those crunchy nut cornflakes are something else. They've got the honey coating on them. They're
very
yummy.
Nice. Lauren says cornflakes.
Sue Hosking says nah to both, although cornflakes with orange juice isn't bad.
Goodness me.
Cocoa Pops or Nutri-Grain for me.
There's a nutritionist listening to this having some sort of horror.
Conniptions.
Charlene says cornflakes.
Marley says rice bubbles are so good. I agree, Marley.
Sarah Patterson says Sarah Patterson says no match for a spot of snap, crackle and pop.
I did say that.
Yes, you did.
Lena says rice bubbles all the way.
Patricia says cornflakes, please.
Matt Cummins from the Ace Radio Network, I do believe, says cornflakes.
Tess Trimboli, ex-workmate of mine, says cornflakes definitely, but rice bubbles for baking.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Barry Bissell, Mr. Take 40 Australia himself, he says cornflakes.
Janet Clayton says, I just love the snap, crackle and pop. The chocolate version's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Johnny Vertican, I've got to explain this one. Johnny Vertican and Stephen Reitman both sent us the BBC Studios video of Vivian from the Young Ones doing this cornflakes conniption, for want of a better description. Oh. So it's two votes there for cornflakes. Very funny if you want to look at it on YouTube.
I love the Young Ones.
I didn't. Oh. But that was very funny.
I could just only be talking like this. Ian says, bugger breakfast. One you can make honey joys with. You can too, cornflakes. Yeah. And the other, chocolate crackles with hay. I didn't even think of that, Ian. Yes.
It's a win-win, says Strawny. Carl Van Est, Captain Carl, says cornflakes.
Simon Owens from 3AW says rice bubbles with a tablespoon of sugar and farmhouse milk, the one with the extra dollop of cream.
Old Croaky says, look, I love both. However, when it comes to the crunch, cornflakes.
Nice, old Croaky. And Wayne, 1965, from the Twitter, says, cornflakes uncontested.
Well, not really, Wayne, as the voting will tell you. Neither, both, or Vegemite on toast. Got 25%. The rice bubbles polled 30%.
Right.
And not a majority win by any stretch of the imagination. Cornflakes with 45%.
Fairly close. There you go. I can see why people would pick the cornflakes. I had forgotten that you do the honey joys with the cornflakes. So the classic fate food.
But it's funny about the rice bubbles seem to have their appeal for the other things that you can do for them as well as that. And a lot of other ones that we got in the neither or both category were Cocoa Pops. A lot of people talking about Cocoa Pops.
Which is just
Pops.
A chocolate version of rice bubbles,
exactly.
Really.
And there is a chocolate version of rice bubbles, apparently. There you go. There's the food poll. Cornflakes winning by 45%. Mm. And that is Food Bites for another edition. Hope you enjoyed it. We will talk to you again soon.
Hopefully.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to Food Bites. Check out our Facebook page for recipes, tips, and all the latest news. That's Food Bites with Sarah Patterson and Kevin Hillier.